I'm Jeremy Meeks.
I'm David Helm.
And this is Preacher's Talk, a podcast for preachers and those who love preaching. Brought to you by the Simeon Trust, Nine Marks. You can find more about both these organizations, simeontrust.org, ninemarks.org. Helping churches.
Better preaching everywhere.
Better preaching everywhere. Helpful resources.
Anywhere.
Everywhere. Anywhere. There you go. Yeah. Oh, man, that sounds good. You know, write us if you have a question or you have a topic you want us to tackle, because we are always trying to serve those listening to us. Feedback at preacherstalk.org. Super helpful. In fact, today's topic has to do with this. But before we get to the topic, Dave, you and I have a guest.
We have a guest.
Who's our guest, Dave?
Your boss and my salvation.
Yeah. That sounds,
I'm glad this is recorded.
Yes. Right.
We got Kevin Walker in the house,
Kevin
director
Walker
of ministries, the Charles Simeon Trust.
Okay. Kevin, director of ministries for the Simeon Trust. You also labor in a church? What do you do?
Yeah. I'm part of the pastoral staff at Holy Trinity Church downtown, where I'm an assistant pastor overseeing our apprenticeship and internship program there.
Awesome. Glad to have you here.
Yeah.
Glad to have you here to talk about analogies, illustrating by analogies. You know, we talked on episode 36 about effective illustrations. Pastors a lot of times are struggling with illustrations. Either they're enthusiastic about their use but don't really know what to do with them, or they like, they're long and complex. I just want to avoid them because I don't want to get in the weeds.
Yep.
It's kind of like people who don't start building projects because they seem like it's going to be too much work, mm-hmm. which is an analogy.
Yep. Well done.
Thank you. Yeah. So here I want to focus on analogies and how we might use them in preaching. So, like, Kevin, you're our guest. How about this? What is an analogy?
Yeah, an analogy is a comparison between two things that they share a similarity and differences. And so an analogy seems to be lining up what the thing is that's similar for the purpose of explaining or showing something.
Great. Dave, you got anything to add to that?
Well, yeah. So guys that try to silo these conversations don't recognize that there's a lot of overlap between an analogy, which compares, a simile, you know, he is like a bear, because those are two different things that are compared. But, you know, you also have symbolism. I remember Carson telling us, symbolism is speaking of one thing in terms that are suggestive of something else.
Right.
So that's kind of analogous.
Yep. Right?
You know, I studied under Beale. Beale actually connects typology to analogy as though there's a massive amount of overlap.
Right.
So I guess as we're getting underway, we're going to talk about analogy. You're right. We are talking about illustrating things through comparing likeness with some lesser or greater degree of overlap.
Yep. Yeah. So this whole comparative thing is important because, like, when we're thinking about analogies, the analogies could be like real simple analogies. This is like that, and they're almost like a one-to-one correlation. Yeah. Or the analogies could be like widely divergent, and yet what holds them together and the power of them is what they have in common. And in fact, it might be how widely divergent they are that actually drive the commonality between them.
Yeah.
So, like, Dave, why should we care about analogies? Like, what? Why would we...
The value add?
Yeah. What's the value add? What's the power of an analogy?
Well, a lot of times I don't actually understand a principle until I see or hear somebody talk about its likeness. I mean, you've got Jesus doing analogies in the scriptures. Yep. The kingdom of God is like this.
Right.
And it's more than just a one-to-one correspondence. There are a host of things you could say about it, a turning of the prism. So analogies by nature reinforce, they expose, they land, like, they give me the, now I get it moment.
Right.
And so I think that's probably one of the upsides or benefits or value adds of analogies.
Yeah. Kevin?
Yeah. I think if I was to put words to maybe a little bit of what you said, there's a way it...
Are you saying I didn't use words?
You did use words.
Yeah, I used a lot of words, but
we
they weren't
use
clear.
An analogy to understand
Let me see if I can give an analogy.
Right.
it helps visualize and concretize maybe abstract concepts.
That's fantastic.
But another thing I think it does is it can help distill, bring down to like a singularity. Yeah, you're comparing them.
Right.
But there's one particular thing that you're now forced to speak about to demonstrate the similarity and what way that is.
That's good. And I think that, like, especially because we're talking about analogies for the purpose of illustration, and we're going to get into what we mean by that in a second. But I think that one of the big helpful things is that analogies are ordinarily very short.
Mm-hmm.
They're compact, right? Yeah. They do the work of a poet. They say little, but mean much. And so, especially as guys are like, man, these illustrations tend to run off the rails and get everything we're talking about to help clarify, concretize something, help us see the thing, understand the thing for what it is. Another benefit is they're short.
Yeah.
And so we can work a lot of analogies in as we go along the way. And I mean, here's the deal. Like, so I want to make sure that we kind of hinted around at this, but is using analogies biblical? I mean, apparently, according to what we said, let's just maybe it'd be helpful if we all shared like an analogy that we particularly enjoy from the Bible and why we enjoy it. And Kevin, since you're the guest, you get to go first.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, Dave mentioned it before. It's images. So right now we're working with our interns through the Psalms of Ascent. And Psalms are using images like crazy. It's the poetic nature you just mentioned. And so one of the ones we just looked at is, more than watchmen wait for the morning, we wait for the Lord.
Right.
Or as the mountains surround Jerusalem, so the Lord protects and surrounds his people. So demonstrating something about our disposition towards God,
right,
eagerly waiting and anticipating his help and coming. Or the protective nature of God for his people as the mountains surround Jerusalem.
Fantastic.
Now, in that case, why would, for example, as the mountains surround Jerusalem, why would that have been particularly helpful for the people to whom that text was written?
Because they had seen them.
There you go. Yeah.
Or they lived there, or they were walking there in the case of Psalms of Ascent. So they're going up and they have this picture in their mind of, oh man, they're all around, like I can see it. Man, that's exactly what God's protection is like for us.
Right. And every time I look at those mountains, I can go like,
you think back to it. Yeah.
That's like what God does. Great.
So we've hit on something here that I think is helpful, and it's this word you just use, visualize. So analogies enable a listener to see the things about which you are speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And this is probably why they're loaded in the Bible.
Right.
I mean, I'll just give one that's famous, Psalm 1.
Yeah.
You can talk about a distinction or a comparison between the righteous and the wicked.
Right.
You can do that in an abstract, theoretical, theological way. But as soon, and this is, I really love your thing about their quick hitting as opposed to storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We got a lot of guys telling stories in the pulpit that would be better giving an analogy.
Right.
Because the story goes too long, too involved. But there's one thing to talk about the righteous and the wicked, theoretically, theologically. It's another thing to say the righteous are like a tree planted firmly by waters, which bears fruit in its season. The wicked are like chaff, which cannot stand, and in the judgment will be blown away.
Yeah.
I mean, there's an immediate visualization that the listener now is able to absorb in an evocative way.
Right.
That hits their life with real force.
And the helpfulness of those two analogies is that when you hear like righteous, wicked, you're like, I do think those are two sides of a coin, right? They seem rather different from each other. Well, how different are they? And the analogies are helpful in showing like on multiple levels, because like what's the benefit of a tree versus chaff, right? Well, you got one that's like firmly planted, another one that just blows everywhere.
Right.
But then you kind of get to stack the analogies where the tree actually produces something.
Yeah.
And the chaff is useless.
Yeah, just burned up. And I mean, that's its only use anymore.
Exactly, it's only use. So you're like, oh my goodness. Like these things are so, I thought originally righteousness and wickedness, probably different. right? Like, but by the analogy, you're like, oh, these are even more different than I thought, both in their current state and their ends, which is awesome. Mine is like back to the, you know, because you brought it up, Dave, but Jesus, the kingdom of heaven is as if, is like, a man should scatter seed. This is in Mark 4, should scatter seed on the ground. You're like, okay. Now, thankfully, Jesus keeps talking because that's not exactly clear. But then he clarifies it. He sleeps and rises night and day, and the seed sprouts and grows. He knows not how, which is true, right? When you really think about it, you're like, I don't know. I just toss seed out there, and then I go to sleep or whatever, and I don't exactly know how things grow. And we're all like scientifically advanced these days, right? But it's still like it's kind of almost a magical thing. Like it just goes there. It grows. He doesn't know how. The earth produces by itself. First the blade, then the ear, then the full grain in the ear. But when the grain is ripe, but once he puts in the sickle because the harvest has come. Well, how did it all start? Well, this is all about the kingdom, right? So you get wrapped up in like how agricultural practices work. But it's this thing that like the kingdom of God, how does it exactly grow and everything? You're like, well, it's a kind of this mysterious thing. Mm-hmm. And yet a lot like throwing seeds out there, it grows and it is harvested and is ready for good use. And boy, is it the kingdom like that, which is super encouraging because especially as ministers, sometimes we're like, I'm not exactly sure what's getting done here. Yeah. I'm tossing out the seed, but how's this actually going to work? And it's like, sometimes you don't exactly know how it's all going to work.
And it's two things that are so different.
Right.
Kingdom, seed. But there is a very important similarity that using the analogy drives home.
Well, right. And in Mark 4, if I remember it correctly, he's got three or four seed analogies because he wants to, to say the kingdom is like something, one-to-one correspondence, doesn't capture the fullness of the kingdom.
Mm, right.
And so he's actually describing facets of it through various analogies, even though all of them come forth from a seed or a tree or a plant.
And yet, and this is what's key, the seed as an analogy works in different ways in each of the things that Jesus is doing, even this compact space of something like Mark 4. Or you think about John's use of a seed, he's using a completely different way. Unless a seed falls into the ground and dies, you're like, oh, wait, hold on a second. Okay, he's talking about something completely different.
Right.
So he's using these very like typical agricultural things. And it's interesting that the ones we brought up, and this hopefully helps us start to understand how we might use analogies. These are all like visible, tangible things that concretize something that are out of like really basic in everyday life. Because you could come up with fascinating and complex analogies, but most of the analogies are like, well, just look around you. This is like that. This very hard thing to understand. The kingdom of God, well, just think about people throwing out seeds. They're actually pretty simple, which helps us understand like how does audience affect our use of analogies?
Well, first of all, you better be using one that they're familiar with.
Right.
So, and this happens to me sometimes cross-culturally where I'll use an analogy that it might work in the States, but it doesn't work in Hong Kong. And all of a sudden you're looking at yourself going, why did I use that?
Yeah.
I'll just give you an example. So a lot of our principal instructions in the Simeon Trust give you a picture that states or stands for the principle.
Right.
This is an attempt to visualize, concretize an idea. So you might have something like, you know, the principle of structure. Well, just as, you know, every passage has an organizing nature to it and therefore revealing an emphasis, so too the human body has all these bones. Well, one time I used this mastodon illustration. they didn't know what I was talking about.
Right.
Because back to your point on audience, the audience in some sense needs whatever you're going to use. They need to have a quick hitting, immediate connective tissue to, or you use the wrong analogy in that moment.
Right. Now this could be especially challenging because our task is to explain the Bible written at a very different time, very different place. And then sometimes the challenge is making an analogy to help the analogy come true. Cause like they don't know what a mastodon is. So like that one's not in the Bible. You're bringing that to bear to try to illustrate something. There's other times, this is my favorite example, where a guy was playing off of trying to explain the metaphor in the Bible that it wasn't even his text, but he was just like, the great thing about the sacrifice of Jesus is that his blood makes us white as snow, right? So an analogy between what Jesus' work does and what happens to us to become white as snow. Unfortunately, he was sharing this in Sudan. And the translator was looking at him, and he's okay, you're going to have to come up with something else because, like, we don't have snow.
Right.
We don't have and he's like, well, just use the word for snow. He's like, we don't have the word for snow. And then he goes, okay, ice. And they're like, yeah, you're going to have to try again.
Strike two.
Strike two.
Yeah, it's using something that's known.
There you go.
Known.
To visualize, concretize, explain something that's unknown. And so if it's not known, it's defeating the purpose.
Right. So we're going to have to pay really close attention to our audience, which means that now hopefully most of the people listening to this are preaching in their own church. Hopefully they're going to know the culture and the people in their church. But Kevin, what might be the danger or the temptation of going like, well, I want to sound smart. So I'm going to use an analogy that's like on the very fringe of like my people's understanding.
Yeah, I mean, that's springing from a danger of pride and wanting to look good and be impressive. And it can actually muddy what you're trying to do or actually like work against what you're trying to do. Even if you understand it, they're not going to understand it. And so it's going to fall flat and just waste time in your sermon and not get done what you're hoping for.
Yeah, and it's pretty interesting because, you know, like take the Jesus and the seed thing or the tree planted by water. Well, these things would have made absolute sense to the people in time. Now, thankfully, these are very simple, but why was he using those? It was because it was very practical to his time and place. And if the Lord Jesus uses simple analogies, then we probably are too. And interesting enough, in a maybe agricultural setting, these kinds of illustration or analogies are the ways that we should do it. But if, you know, we're on the south side of Chicago, people think that vegetables come from grocery stores, right? Like, they're like, I don't know, I just go to the store and get it.
They do, don't they?
So we're going to have to do some work at explaining the analogies in the Bible. But when we're using our own, like you're saying, Kevin, like, put the cookies on the bottom shelf. So, okay.
That's a known analogy for me. Cookies on the bottom shelf.
Cookies, bottom shelf. There you go. And that's just the thing. Like, they just come out in life. But I can imagine somebody listening to this thinking, okay, Dave, how can I grow in my use of analogies?
Yeah, so let's talk to the guy who is educated, doctrinally engaged. Say he has some history of thought, logic. He's a teacher. Some people think he's a teacher of the Bible. In other words, he deals in abstract ideas and processes them in his own mind and comprehends them. That man, that kind of preacher, an academic preacher, needs analogies in the pulpit because he thinks he's communicating everything clearly, and he might be, but that doesn't mean anybody is grabbing them or they're actually at kind of an affectionate level internalizing them. So I think our guys who have some education behind them could be in danger of thinking, if I just explain the idea, I've done my job in the pulpit. Analogies are critical to helping develop you as a preacher rather than just an explainer of thought or doctrine.
And okay, great, agreed, strongly agree. So how does that guy grow in his use of analogies? Like, so help him out.
So he's got to start using them. I mean, he might not think he needs them.
Okay, great. Yeah. So beginning place is to recognize. Okay, good. Kevin?
Yeah. Real simple. I just talk to my kids more or really any kids. It happened to me last night.
Okay.
I'm picking up my kids and a neighbor from youth group. We're driving downtown, and the kids are talking about something that kids always talk about, outer space.
Of course.
And my daughter says, do you know you can see Chicago from outer space? And we began talking about like why that is and all that stuff, and we kind of came to the idea, it's not just because there's one bright light, but but it's because there's a whole bunch of bright lights gathered together. And I began to think, like a good pastor, that's like the church. You might have one bright standing Christian, but you might not notice them from very far away. But if you put a whole bunch of them together, and I was like, oh, I could use this on the podcast.
I've got an analogy.
So just talking to my kids and thinking about observing how the world works and be like, oh, what else do I know fits that kind of idea? Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that was going to be my answer, right? So we begin with Dave's, like, assume need, right? And then you're like, okay, so assuming need, what do I do? And my answer was going to be similar to what you gave by way of example, Kevin, which is live an observant life, right? Mm-hmm, which I know sounds lame, but it's totally true where you're like, first of all, I'm going to read the Bible and appreciate the analogies of the Bible.
Yeah.
And not just appreciate, like, the analogies that are in the Bible, pay attention to how they're being used. And I'm going to listen to everyday speech, kids, reading books, I'm watching a movie or something, and watch for the analogies that are going on around me. And then just stop and go like, wait, why was that analogy either effective or what's the problem with that analogy? Why doesn't it quite make sense? Is it a me thing? Is it a cultural thing? What's going on? And if you live that kind of observant life, you'll grow in your use of analogies.
Okay, so if a guy needs to keep doing that, one way to do it is to, in your manuscript, almost write after you've explained something, just write, just as, so also.
Wow. Right.
And then sit there for a while until you can actually answer and finish that kind of a statement.
It's like a Mad Libs thing, right? Like, I know I should have one here.
I got to have one here.
Right. Which, now you're hitting this thing that I want to talk about for a second, which is because I can hear somebody listening to this go like, okay, cool. I understand the power of analogies, where to come up with analogies. Where do analogies go? So Dave, just to rearticulate this, where are you talking about analogies going?
I used one last night while preaching. I was in Acts 12 and where James is killed by Herod, and yet Peter, who's detained, ends up being released by Herod.
Mm.
And I knew that passage was going to be difficult for the listener because the mystery of why is someone released while another dies?
Mm.
And I was reaching for that idea. In other words, I used an analogy in a moment of concession.
Mm.
I concede to you that this is a difficult passage, that we have some who are persecuted and undergo death for the gospel while others are released. I concede that to you, and that's difficult. But just as Peter was released and James was killed, so too, my grandparents were on the road from Chicago to Central Illinois in 1962 and struck head-on by a drunk driver. My grandfather was taken. My grandmother was released. And her question after that event was, why me?
Mm-hmm.
Why? Why am I here and he's not here? Now, I didn't press this into a big, long story.
Right.
But I allowed the angst of the listener's questioning to come home in a kind of an emotional way, but just quick in regard to it's just as so also.
Great.
And it validated their question.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Awesome. Kevin, you got an example?
Yeah. One that I used when I was preaching the Magnificat was water. I'm talking about God's mercy finding the lowly.
Mm.
And I just kind of said, God's mercy is kind of like water, and that it always finds the lowest place.
Mm.
I grew up with a basement, and where I was preaching at a church in Buffalo, New York, everybody there has basements and sump pumps. Some people even have multiple sump pumps because their basements are flooding. I just want to be, you know, this is true. Water is finding the lowest place.
Mm.
But then I flipped it, and I said, not only that, though, not only can it find low, it can also lift up and uphold the heaviest oil tanker on the ocean.
Wow.
And so kind of the mightiness of the mercy that is also finding those. So just trying to take
there
something natural from
good.
Creation.
Yeah. Good to preach
to
it.
Show, well, yeah, that was an example that I liked. So.
That was good. I used an analogy last night. So I got invited to the youth group to answer like hard questions from kids. And this one kid was asking a question about like sanctification. And I use an analogy to demonstrate, first of all, what sanctification isn't. So, you know, I wish I could tell you that sanctification was like the initial ascent on a roller coaster. You know, when you're going on a roller coaster, you hear that weird
click,
sound.
Click, click, click.
And what that is actually the safety bar underneath the car that goes, once you get up, you're not going backwards, which is great when you're on a roller coaster. And I wish I could tell you that that's what sanctification is like. It's just always onwards and upwards on this really smooth trajectory. So that's not what sanctification is like. What sanctification is like is the rest of the roller coaster ride. Right? It's up, down, you're upside down sometimes, you're on the side. And it's a wild adventure. And yet, sanctification is movement.
That's great.
Toward Jesus.
That's great.
And it doesn't always go the way you want it to go. It doesn't always go the way you're expecting it to go. And yet, if you're going to get discouraged if you think it's that initial incline. But if you can hold on for the ride and know that you're headed somewhere, well, then sanctification is going to get you all the way home.
Hmm.
See, you really, both of you have exemplified, again, the value or the need for analogy. I mean, take sanctification. That's a massive theological doctrine. You didn't quote Charles Hodge to the kids. You didn't read B.B. Warfield.
Right.
You didn't say, here's the definition according to this dictionary or that.
Mm-hmm.
You visualized it.
Yep.
And therefore, they understood it and took it home.
Right. And using something that most teenagers know,
right,
which is a roller coaster. Not, I've often talked about sanctification like a stock market ticker, right? Whereas generally up, but lots of ups and downs in between. That's going to fall flat with 14-year-olds
right,
at a youth group.
Right. Right. And similarly, if you talk about water in basements and sump pumps in Arizona, everybody's going to be like, right, okay, what's a basement, right?
Yeah.
But we don't even have rain here. Like, so it's going to, it's audience-specific, concrete ways to make some of the most challenging things in the Bible immediately, not just relevant, but immediately understandable by people in such a way that they won't only be entertained, although it should be this like, oh, yes, this is pleasing, but actually drives understanding and goes, okay, I understand. I would like to continue understanding. This makes sense to me. I believe this. I will continue to believe this. So, preachers, work on your analogies. Hugely helpful in effective preaching.
For more articles, books, and podcasts, please visit 9marks.org.